You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The California State University system encompasses nearly two dozen campuses, making it the largest and most diverse four-year college institution in the country. And soon, there will be a new change in leadership. This fall, Mildred Garcia will become the 11th CSU chancellor and the first Latina appointed to the position. And Chancellor-elect Garcia is facing a range of challenges when she takes office, from inheriting a budget deficit to documented mishandlings of sexual harassment complaints, a threat of a labor strike, and the possibility of tuition increases. I spoke with Chancellor-elect Mildred Garcia about how she's prepared to weather these Cal State challenges and shape a stronger foundation across its 23 campuses. You know, whether we go to college or not, I mean, it really often has a story that begins with childhood. So I want to start with your family story, how it shaped not only your decision to attend college, but really to have a long career in higher education.
Well, I will say to you that I am a child of seven. My parents came from Puerto Rico to Brooklyn to seek a better life with five of their seven children. And then 8 years later, there was a surprise, two surprises, my brother and I. And they came for why people come to the mainland, obviously, for a better life for them and their children. And what my parents always insisted was they said that the only inheritance a poor family could leave you is a good education. They would say that to us in Spanish constantly. And you know, so I'm a first generation college student, and my parents worked in those factories in downtown Brooklyn. And they kept on sharing with us that education was important if we didn't want to work in those factories. When my father died when I was 12, my mother allowed me at the age of 14 to get working papers and work in that factory. And that opened my eyes as to why my parents said what they said. They didn't want us in that factory, and I quit and vowed to that foreman that someday I would be his boss and I would get my mother out of that factory. And so that has shaped me. It was a great education. And that has shaped me so much. And education has been important to me. And it is what I dedicated my life to make sure that first generation low-income students of color and all those who are underrepresented, as well as those who enter our doors, get a high quality, affordable higher education.
What I'm learning from you is the education that you got about the power of higher education. It really started from not only at your home, but with your family and the circumstances, the immigration story that so many people have when they come to this country. What did you learn? Because I imagine you did at an early age about, one, the power of education. I mean, you learned that from your parents, but also what did you learn about the inequities that come with education?
You know, I have a story about inequities that I've learned, you know, I learned later, but it was so powerful. So my brother and I went to school and they were integrating the schools. When we moved to the housing project when my father died. And so there were some of my brothers and sisters did not go to the same elementary schools that my brother and I did. We went to PSA in Brooklyn Heights. Brooklyn Heights is an affluent neighborhood in Brooklyn. And I brought home a violin and my brother brought home a viola, much to the chagrin of the family as we practiced in a small apartment. They took us to Broadway plays. They took us to the museums. These were free things that my other brothers and sisters did not have. And so I'm not smarter than my brothers and sisters. I just had the opportunity to have a great foundation in education and then move on. And, you know, the power of faculty and teachers along the way who saw me something. They kept on pushing me. I went to the community college first, and there were faculty members there and worked and people and staff in the financial aid office where I worked as a college or study student that encouraged me to keep going on. And so I did. And that's the power, right? The power of higher ed to make sure that who enters our doors gets that support network, gets the support services in order to continue, because everybody can reach their highest potential, given the tools and shown how to reach those goals with those tools that we offer.
And you are shaping that in leadership roles. You've had many high-level roles at universities across the country. Why the California State University system?
So there are two systems that I love, and one of them is the City University of New York that gave me the foundation I had. I went to a community college and then I transferred to a four-year institution, both public. And then I worked at the California State almost 12 years. And I saw that they too are really educating what I call the new majority of America, the first generation, the low income, the students of color, the adults, to go on and do their best, to reach their highest potential. These students come in seeking to get out of poverty the way I did, and yet they fall in love with education and become the workforce, the leaders, the community leaders that are living in our cities and state and uplifting our cities and state. So I then fell in love with the CSU. When this opportunity came open, I said that's a system that I would love to work with again.
Yeah, and you were the former president at both Cal State University Dominguez Hills, Cal State Fullerton. How did both of those positions, being the leader at both of these campuses, how did it prepare you to become chancellor of a university system that is nearly two dozen campuses?
So the system is 23 campuses, and I will say to you that both institutions were a learning experience for me. When I went to Dominguez Hills, I was coming from New York City and in Brooklyn, and, you know, and it's a different place. So I got to really understand the diversity of that part of California. And we learned how to go into those neighborhoods and seek out individuals to make sure that they understood that the CSU Dominguez Hills was a place for them. And so we engaged with our communities, and the faculty was so committed to the students. And the staff was so committed. I will tell you, that's what I love about the CSU. Faculty and staff are there because they want to be there, because they love the students we serve, and that many of them come from that background. And the same thing in Fullerton. I went to a different part of California in Orange County, and there I saw the changing demographics of how it was already affecting Orange County, and how, again, I learned about a different population, the Vietnamese population, the Hispanic population. And there, the Hispanics and all of their different backgrounds. And there we too worked extremely hard to have to graduate students at a higher rate and start to close the opportunity gaps, which is so important for the state of California.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with incoming California State University Chancellor Mildred Millie Garcia. So the position for chancellor became open following the resignation of Chancellor Joseph Castro. And as you are well aware, that was amid criticism of its handling of sexual harassment complaints. And that was brought to light because of the USA Today investigation. And this is controversy that still continues today. The state auditor released its findings into the mishandling of incidents. A law firm that I believe was retained by the Cal State system released its own report with recommendations. Given that you have been a president at two Cal State University campuses, you know, at least within the past decade, why do you think all of this unfolded and happened?
Well, I can't talk about the past. I can certainly talk about the future, right? So here's what I would say about that. Number one, that report that was done by the consultants that the California State hired is one of the best in the country that I've seen. As you know, I am now currently the president of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities that represents over 350 institutions. Title IX is not a California State University issue. It's an issue across the country. That report not only talks about what should have happened and what was wrong, to how to make it better. And the CSU is committed, the board, the interim Chancellor Kester, and me coming in to make sure we implement that report. It's a model report for the nation. And when we go ahead and implement this report, which they've already started, we're going to be a model for the entire nation on Title IX. It is very clear what steps we have to take, the money we have to spend in making sure that we have the personnel in place, that the personnel understands and learns how to do investigations. And it will be my job to work with the president. And I know they've already started implementation teams on their campuses to make sure that that report is implemented and that we are all held accountable to very high standards to ensure that our universities have that caring system for everybody that is not afraid to speak up when something like this happens. And then my job and the president's job is to hold these people accountable.
Right, because at the root of this is trust and accountability, and there are staff and students that want to trust that the CSU universities and the system as a whole, that it will ensure consequences when it comes to sexual harassment. You talk about this unparalleled report and recommendations that come from that law firm that was retained by the CSU system. You have gone through it. Can you help people understand what specifically you're going to do differently to ensure and build that trust and accountability?
I will make sure that, number one, that the implementation that has begun following that report to the letter, how are the implementation teams being set up? How are we moving forward with the recommendations in the report? How are we making sure that these individuals that take these positions to do the investigations have had the professional development and understanding of how we move that report forward? And that we have one person that I know that is going to be at the chancellor's office working as well with the campuses to hold people accountable and ensure that we are following that report to the letter of the law.
Yeah, and this is, there's another issue that it's not just with the CSU system, but I do think with higher education as a whole, there is an issue of potentially the appetite for universities and colleges. It has become challenging in recent years. I mean, the cost of education, student debt, coupled with the cost of living, outpassing a lot of salaries, even with a college degree. You know, given that you've been part of decision making for years within higher education, including the CSU system, what do you say to a young adult who questions the value of higher education to become successful in life?
You know, I think what we have to do is have the ability to become educational systems that are educating the public. I was the co-chair of the Gates Values Commission for Post-Secondary Ed that had a commission that represented everybody in the country, all walks of life, people, influential media, journalists, all business people, unions, etc. There is no doubt that in the future you will need a post-secondary degree, especially a bachelor's degree. The research is clear. What we have to do is show that to our students. If that student wants to go into one profession, let's use our alumni, let's use businesses, let's use individuals that have gone through the CSU and been successful. And then we at the CSU have to provide quality education and help the students reach those high goals and help them go into that career that they want to go into. Look, we graduated last year 120,000 people in California from the CSU. 1 in 10 of the residents in the CSU of California are a graduate of the CSU. 1 in 20 in the nation. Let's use all of these alums to help our students. Students need to see people like them. I certainly did as I was growing, and it took a while because there weren't very many, but I did see women, and that was important to me. And, you know, I looked up to them, and we can be role models, we could be mentors, we could be advocates using our alums and demonstrating how they do that. You know, our organization right now has promising practices from the Gates Report that shows how we are getting the message out to students with evidence. And that's what we're going to do with the CSU. And families make a big difference for our students. We're going to talk to families in their neighborhoods and in their language and in their space.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you're bringing up outreach, and a key component of that as well is funding. And the Cal State system, and you'll be inheriting this as chancellor, it's facing a budget deficit of roughly $1.5 billion. One solution that trustees are weighing, they have not decided on anything, is whether to increase tuition by about 6%, I believe, for several years. Given that this is a university system known for providing an affordable education, often to people going to college, they're the first in their family to go to college, why place that burden potentially on students, many of whom come with financial hardships? Why even consider it?
Well, let me begin by saying I need to get fully informed on the proposal that is coming up. I am not there yet, so I have not seen it in totality, but I will say that it is my goal to continue to keep the CSU affordable and work along with our state legislators for funding for the CSU. In addition to that, we need to start looking at how do we bring more resources into the CSU May that be philanthropic? May it be partnerships with businesses, whatever it is. And then we also have to look at where are we in the CSU as far as efficiencies. I know that that was happening while I was there, and we will continue to be more efficient with our resources and make sure that the tuition is affordable for all students. I get it. I was a first generation student. I had to work. I've been working since I was 14. Now it's different environments and it's different times, but our students are working. Our students have families. Our students have lost jobs because of the pandemic. And so we are going to do our darndest to keep it as affordable as we possibly can with the support of our state and our philanthropic organizations in the state.
A crucial piece also is to the Cal State University success is staff. And you underscored how much you value staff within the CSU system. But there is also the threat, the possibility of strikes. And that's obviously due to wages in the face of a higher cost of living here in California. What experience do you have with negotiating and compromising with collective bargaining groups, unions?
I was on the bargaining team when I was at Montclair State University in New Jersey. And I think that we can work together. Look, I think our faculty and staff and administrators are all there for the same goal, for student success. And yes, they must have an equitable salary. And so we will need to work together and collaborate together in order to reach that goal.
How has striking the right balance, given that you have this experience and you have a really good perspective of striking or trying to strike the right balance between fair wages amid budget shortfalls? I mean, how has that changed with higher education over the years? Has it become more difficult to strike that balance?
It's something that we have to really look at. As I look at the country, and again, we have institutional members from all over the country at ASCU, American Association of State College and University. This is a national problem. We have to make sure that as state colleges and universities, and I do thank the funding that we're getting, but we have to make sure that we are getting the funding that we need in order to educate our citizens. It is an issue as you look across the state. We've seen things happening across the state that we do not want happening at the CSU. So we will need to find that balance, difficult as it may be, to make sure that we manage fair wages, equitable wages, with student success. And I believe we can get that together.
I also think that comes with a pretty unique challenge with the CSU system. You mentioned there are 23 campuses, and each are different. They have their own dynamics. They have their own challenges. You have a few months before you actually step into the chancellor role. How are you mentally preparing for navigating unique and nuanced challenges amid, I believe, the biggest higher education system in the country?
You know, I think the one thing that I do have is that I have worked with my colleagues on those 23 campuses as a president. And so I got to know not only the campuses I serve, but campuses that they serve through them and our collaboration. Yes, we are not all the same, but we are part of a system. And so we will work to make sure that we help those institutions in those areas they need help, as well as understand the uniqueness and then speak about how the CSU is a system serving the state. It is absolutely true. They are all different with different environments, different geographies, different populations. But at the end, we're all focused on student success. We know our goal. Everybody can do it differently, but we've got to get there.
So the last piece of funding and money that I need to get to, it brings me to your salary, which is nearly $800,000 annually. It comes with an additional housing allowance of $8,000 a month, an auto allowance of $1,000 a month, and $80,000 annually in deferred compensation. A trustee who voted against the salary was quoted in EdSource saying that it is close to double than what the chancellor made 4 years ago. I understand that you don't set the salary. I understand that this salary is in line or even below what other chancellors make across the country. But how do you explain this level of compensation to people who find it difficult to comprehend, especially amid budget shortfalls, potential tuition increases, and criticism over staff wages?
Yeah, I certainly understand the sentiment, and I am committed to equitable salaries. And I think we should be committed to equitable salaries for all. And I will leave that to the board and their decision. But I believe in equitable salaries for all, not only for myself, but for all our faculty and staff.
Finally, You step into this role in October. You got a few months. You're thinking you're to prepare. But once you step in, what do you hope to accomplish within your first year?
First year, the first thing I'm going to do is learn from the work groups that interim chancellor and the board have started. Title IX being one of them, enrollment management being another. They have done great work in the 2025 graduation initiative, which we have to take into the future. So I want to learn as much as I can, the tuition policy that they're talking about. Learn as much as I can as I walk in, because I do have a job now that I have to finish up here. And so I'm going to walk in and learn and listen and truly listen to the faculty and staff and students. And as they say, listen to the silences to understand how do we continue to uplift the CSU. What will I accomplish? The implementation of that Title IX report. And we're going to be working on that graduation report of GI 2025 and take that into the future to continue to close opportunity gaps and graduate students so they can move forward. And I'm going to continue to look and see how do we serve our faculty and staff with equitable wages.
Chancellor Select Garcia, thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to coming back to sunny California and working alongside all of you and my colleagues and my community.
Mildred Garcia is the incoming chancellor of the California State University System. She officially takes the position in October. Still ahead, a Butte County nonprofit came up with a novel approach to create affordable housing. We'll learn about this home sharing model that's working to tackle aging safely at home and affordable housing all under one roof. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.